Hi again, this is Mike Zimbrick. I'm here with the second podcast on management and diagnosis of headaches in children and adolescents. And this episode will focus on the initial assessment, the history, exam, and diagnosis part of headaches. First, we'll go over a basic background on headaches, including primary and secondary headaches, and then we'll move on to history and exam and diagnosis. So for a basic background, we'll talk first about primary headaches. So when we think of primary headaches, these are the main types of headache disorders that we usually conceive of when we think of headaches. So tension headaches, migraines, and perhaps the trigeminal autonomic cephalalgias, things like cluster headache. We know that recurrent primary headaches are more common in boys before puberty, whereas they are more common in girls after puberty. And that when you're just talking about migraines, that these affect between 20 and 25% of the adult population and about 10% of 10-year-olds. So they get to be more common throughout later childhood and adolescence. So what can you find in a history that will help you differentiate a migraine from a tension headache? Well, there are diagnostic criteria about this, and of course they are available to you online or also in the headache pathway. But the basic things to watch for are the presence of sonophobia and photophobia, so sound and light sensitivity together. Also, the presence of nausea with or without vomiting helps to distinguish a migraine from a tension headache. The moderate to severe pain, so somewhere on that 4 or 5 to 10 out of 10 pain scale. And typically, migraines are associated with a throbbing or pulsating pain. Oftentimes, tension headaches do not have that throbbing character. They will occasionally, but they do tend to have a bit of a different character. Now, tension headaches can have sonophobia or photophobia, but they should not have both. The pain severity in tension headaches should be moderate at most, and they do tend to be bilateral frontal in the forehead or the temples, occasionally around the eyes. Sometimes people with tension headaches, being that they're a muscle contraction-related headache in a lot of cases, may also get some neck and shoulder muscle soreness related to tension headaches. So again, we want to focus on the additional features of the headache to differentiate a migraine from a tension headache, and as well as the severity and the character of the pain. When we're trying to identify a secondary headache, we typically do that based on finding some things that we would call red flags in the history or on the exam. Secondary headaches, or headaches secondary to something else, do not present in quite the same way as primary headaches. They can be difficult, for sure, to pick out, but not always. More often, they have a different pattern that's fairly easy to recognize if you take a detailed history. The causes of secondary headaches, of course, can be unpleasant things like intracranial masses or tumors, increased intracranial pressure, bleeding or vascular abnormalities, but they can also be due to things like viral illnesses, sinus disease, for example. So when we talk about historical red flags, these are things that we would typically hear about, of course, in the history and would have to have provided to us from the patient or the parent. So headaches that are persistently posterior in location, headaches that are constant, meaning really there all the time and increasing, would be considered a red flag. A sudden onset, no prior history of headaches, and all of a sudden there's a brand new headache that hasn't gone away, could be considered a historical red flag. A lot of the red flags that we consider as indicators of secondary headache, though, come with the examination. So the biggest of these, of course, is any new or unexplained neurological exam abnormality. So this could be things like eye misalignment, head tilt, facial weakness, unilateral body weakness, gait abnormalities. Another one would be age under 3 to 4 years. There's a couple of reasons. One is that it's simply a little bit more difficult to be confident in your exam and perhaps even in aspects of your history when you're dealing with recurrent headaches in a child that young. They can't always explain things the way that we might like or with details we might prefer. Also, it's just simply true that migraines and tension headaches are less prevalent among kids in that age group. So if you're playing the percentages, you're a little more likely statistically to find a secondary headache in a child that young versus someone who's a bit older. It doesn't mean they're all secondary headaches. They're just a bit more likely than older children to be secondary headaches. The presence of a neurocutaneous syndrome is also considered a red flag. So neurofibromatosis or tuberous sclerosis, both are associated with potential intracranial neoplasms, be they benign or malignant. Other neurological symptoms not typical of migraine. So a visual aura, as we know, is typical of migraine, but other things such as focal weakness or sensory changes, while certainly possibly part of a migraine syndrome, at the very start, we can't always safely assume that they are. New headache waking in the night or early in the morning. Now, this one certainly can happen to people with a well-established history of tension headaches and migraines, and it's certainly not inappropriate to think of them as things that can begin in the night or first thing in the morning. But what we mean here is that patients whose headaches usually are starting in the night, usually are starting first thing in the morning. Not a child who's had a clear pattern of recurrent headaches, tension headaches, migraines, that occasionally one out of every five, one out of every 10 or so will start in the night. And there's physiological reasons for this. Oftentimes the prodromal features of migraine will begin a day or even a day and a half before the pain actually begins, and it just so happens that the migraine got around to causing pain in the middle of the night. Sudden onset of headache or a presence of a VP shunt, of course, could be other historical or exam red flags that might make you think of a secondary headache. So when we're gathering the history, as I mentioned in the first podcast, we want to be fairly detailed. We do want to know precisely where the headache is felt. If they can point to it, of course, that helps us document. When did the headaches begin? Not when did they get worse, but did the child start having headaches a year ago and they worsened 6 weeks ago and that's why there's concern? It actually can be helpful to know before the headaches worsen, when were the very first headaches? And are the headaches now simply a more frequent or more intense version of ones that were happening for the last couple of years? The severity, again, the faces or 0 to 10 scale is useful. The timing. So sometimes patients will say, well, my headaches begin late in the day or my headaches begin first thing in the morning. But sometimes it's really revealing to ask them to tell you what are they doing at that time of day? What time of the day is it specifically? What time does the clock say? And then you might be able to figure out some more details. What class might they be in? What are they actually up to at that particular time? And a lot of times it can take a second visit when they've kept a headache calendar or log to know some of these things. Associated symptoms, so is there lightheadedness, is there nausea, is there sonophotophobia, is there any other focal changes? What makes it better or worse? Laying down make it better, movement make it worse, that's typically something you'd see with migraines, for example. And we want to know what treatments people have tried. And this is prescription, over-the-counter stuff, as well as non-prescription things. So ice packs, laying down, what have those done? And are they being dosed and taken at appropriate times? How much of an impact has this had? We want to know if they are they missing school? Is it something that people perceive to be a big, bad problem? Or are they living with it? And finally, we want to ask, at least, do you worry that this headache or these headaches are really due to something unpleasant? What is the perception of why these headaches are going on? And occasionally that will give you something really insightful to work with, and maybe you can even allay some fears if they come up. So getting all of this detailed history really helps to create the story or the picture for the patient and the family, not just for the doctor. We will need the information, of course, for tracking headaches, for moving forward to see, are they really better? Are they really worse? What does the information tell us when you have the specifics? The other questions that we like to ask in patients who have a history of headaches or recurrent headaches may be a bit odd, but things like concussion. Have you had concussions? When was the most recent? Is there snoring at night? Is there bruxism or teeth grinding? Does the patient otherwise complain of neck or shoulder pain? Do they have a lot of stressors in their life? And do they perceive that those stressors might be related? Of course, is there any family history of headaches, specifically migraines? Now, on a general examination, in addition to a good general exam, you want to be sure to check the blood pressure and measure the head circumference. Occasionally, we will find abnormal blood pressure as a cause for headaches, but that's not terribly common. We'd like to check for sinus tenderness, any temporomandibular jaw clicks can be helpful to identify, any soreness or knots in the neck and shoulder muscles, or the patient's overall posture. Sometimes the neck and shoulder muscle strain is one of the primary causes of headaches. A mental status exam suggesting depression or stressful or tumultuous parent-child interaction can give us some insight as to causes or factors relating to headaches. And then on neurological examination, we want to be sure to get a good look at the optic discs. Now, this will almost always be through an undilated pupil, so we just mainly want to see the optic discs. Is it sharp? Is it distinct? Or does it appear raised or indistinct? We want to check the extraocular movements, at least a screening strength exam, upper extremity extensors, lower extremity flexors, checking the coordination with ataxia and pronator drift testing, so finger-nose, finger, heel-to-shin testing, a screening exam for sensation, so at least a couple of different dermatomes in the upper extremities and lower extremities, checking the reflexes, so triceps, biceps, brachioradialis, patella, and Achilles, and then gait, including tandem gait. Now, as far as diagnosis or testing, we certainly do want to consider imaging if there are any red flags in the history or the exam. If the patient has optic disc swelling, that really requires urgent and possibly emergent imaging, especially if there's other focal exam abnormalities. This isn't someone who ought to be referred to the clinic, but really should be sent to the emergency department. Any headaches with focal neurological exam abnormalities will generally require emergent evaluation, unless, of course, this patient has a prior and established pattern of complex migraine. And if it's similar to what the child has experienced before, that is likely not going to be needed. Finally, making the diagnosis of a primary headache disorder involves applying the known diagnostic criteria with migraine, photo and sonophobia, nausea and vomiting, typically moderate to severe intensity, usually a throbbing pain, worsening with movement, and it makes people want to lay down, be still, and be quiet. Now, tension headaches, a little bit different, of course, in that they can have sonophobia or photophobia, but not both, mild to moderate severity, bifrontal and non-throbbing character, and not worsened by simple or routine activity. Cluster headaches. Now, we don't come across these in kids real often, but if you do, the way to recognize them are that they have a periorbital pain with ipsilateral rhinorrhea, tearing, and a Horner's syndrome, so ptosis, meiosis, and anhidrosis. These tend to be an activating headache. People don't want to lay down in the dark. They want to be up moving and pacing, and that's one way to try to tell them, apart from migraines. So once we've gotten through history, exam, and perhaps testing, perhaps not, we can then usually be pretty confident in the diagnosis we present to people. That might actually help parents stop worrying or patients stop worrying if we're able to say with a high degree of confidence, hey, this is migraines, or hey, this is tension headaches. And that can lay the groundwork for moving on to treatment and improving headache hygiene and helping the patient take control of things. So that's it for this recording. I'll be back with the next one very soon.